Live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show and welcome to the weekend. I am your host, Radical Russ Belville, and I am not a college football game. Hey, all you XM listeners out there, glad to have you here. We also seem to have survived the XM Sirius merger, and things are looking good at the Russ Belville Show. We got plenty of topics to cover today, lots of stuff to talk about. We're opening up the phone lines at 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. 888-7-RADICAL. We'll be getting your calls in the next segment. And, oh, plenty to talk about. We've got protests that are taking place today, Saturday, all over the country in response to the ban on gay marriage passed by Proposition 8 in California. Also, Senator Joe Lieberman, independent of Connecticut. Should he stay or should he go? We'll take your opinions on that at 888-7-RADICAL. Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. That's an interesting development we need to talk about. And what about these bailouts and the foreclosure crisis? Oh, boy, there's a lot of problems. We're going to take a look at those in Living in America. And in under the radar today, we're going to have a special interview with the director of a fantastic new film called Fuel. Josh Tickle joins us later on today on the show. But before we get to all of that, we must welcome, as we do every week, our favorite immigrant worker from across the pond, working the board a continent away, a man who will still work for an American dollar, a man who would have blown his wonga for the aluminium siding he saw on an advert on the telly, but threw a spanner in the works when he left the queue to play Noughts and Crosses with a comely lass at the Marks and Sparks in Pompey. It's our own Stevie Webb.
Yay!
I had felt bad last week because I didn't come up with any British slang. So
you made up for it there, mate. Yeah, seriously.
I doubled up on that one. Okay,
blimey, that was like a left-right cross and an uppercut and a jab and then a kick in the knackers.
Okay, so let's help out our American listeners here.
Right.
The man who would have blown his wonga.
Spent all his money.
Spent all money on the aluminium siding.
The aluminium.
Yeah. Yes. Because he saw an advert on the telly.
Saw a commercial on the television.
But then he threw a spanner into the works.
Cocked everything up.
Right. Well, I think that's
kind of
British,
too. That's another one, isn't it?
Threw a monkey wrench.
Explaining a Britishism with a Britishism. That's
right,
just wrong.
Sorry. Monkey wrench, basically.
Yes.
When he left the queue.
When I got out of line.
To play Noughts and Crosses.
I don't know what you call that here. Tic-tac-toe?
Tic-tac-toe, that's right. With a comely lass at the Marks and Sparks.
With a charming young lady at the local supermarket.
In Pompey.
In Portsmouth.
There you go. Wow.
It is like another language.
Yeah, you are the winner of our British English contest for today, I guess.
Thank you very much.
And of course, you were the only contestant.
That's very true. But don't take it away from me. I feel so much better about myself.
Well, I'm going to do something to bring that down.
Okay, go on.
Because I know how excited you are about the latest James Bond movie that is coming out.
Don't start.
The Quantum of Solace.
The something of Boris.
Yeah, so I have decided... I've decided here on the Russ Belville Show that we would get your opinion as a British subject,
yes,
and as someone who would definitely have more to consider about these James Bond movies than the rest of us,
mm-hmm,
as to your opinion of the six men who have played James Bond from top to bottom. Let's rank them. Who was the best James Bond?
Do you want to start at number one, right up the top?
Start right at the top.
Okay, let's start at the top. With a controversial one right at the top there, I'm going to go with Roger Moore.
Oh, my.
For the gentlemen, indeed. Vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
Touché. My name is Bond. James Bond.
Okay, Roger Moore at number one. Number two?
Yes. Number two, got to go with Sean Connery.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Bond. James Bond.
Okay, so Sean Connery. Number three?
Number three was a little bit of a toss-up here, but I am going to go for Brosnan there.
All right, Pierce Brosnan.
Can't you just be a good boy and die?
You first.
Okay.
Exactly.
Who's number four?
Now, number four, Timothy Dalton.
A lot of people forget Dalton.
They forget Dalton.
Bond, James Bond.
There's Dalton. Okay, number five.
Number five, coming in all the way from down under. It's George Lazenby, mate.
Ah, fabulous beauties. All of them dolls. Every one different. They've got to be when he's around.
My name's Bond. James Bond.
Okay.
And Cracking Sheila's mate.
So that would leave number six, the worst James Bond of all time.
Worst James Bond in the history of everything ever has to be that cheeky chappy, that swine layabout, that Ben Sherman wearing buffoon. It's Daniel Craig.
I thought I could trust you. You said you weren't motivated by revenge.
I'm motivated by my duty.
Okay. So, yeah. All right, so I can accept the fact that you probably won't be filling the theater to boost the profits of that Quantum of Solace movie there.
To be honest, I haven't really enjoyed anything since GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Which was a long, long time ago.
Really. Oh, boy, yeah.
Seriously, I don't know. I'm just turning into a dreadful old misery guts. But you have to remember, James Bond is part of our culture in Britain. And the reason that I like Roger Moore, I suppose, is because I grew up in the time of Roger Moore and some of the first things, the Bonds that I saw were things like Octopussy with him in them.
Right, right. Okay.
And it was, you know, you want to see a raised eyebrow and, you know, an underwater car. That underwater car was the bomb.
Yes,
was
it
not?
It was awesome.
Was it not? And what's Daniel Craig got? He's got his cell phone. What cell phone? I'm going to start a fight outside of a nightclub called Sparkles or Gossips. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll let the James Bond thing go. We've got to talk about some more important stuff. I know that a lot of you are like me. You work a full-time job for a living. You don't always have the time to catch up on the newspaper or the evening news. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up with the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
Barack Obama asks Hillary Clinton to be his Secretary of State.
Hey, Hillary, I'm looking forward to you advising me as well.
Democrats defend Joe Lieberman against Democrats who want him punished for slandering Democrats. Who needs the GOP anyway?
The real ticket for change this year is the McCain-Palin ticket.
And now U.S. automakers want a government bailout. How much cash can you fit in the back of a 12-mile-per-gallon SUV anyway?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
After all, those Wall Street bailouts have helped so much and been run so well.
Greed is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
America has its first female four-star general, Ann Dunwoody. Today, millions across the country will protest California's Prop 8 that stole the civil right of marriage for gay people.
If Proposition 8 said, now we are going to make marriages between interracial couples illegal, we would have riots in the streets.
Meanwhile, wildfires threaten the counties in Southern California that voted for the gay marriage ban. Hey, maybe God didn't like Prop 8.
I'm not sure I heard from the Lord.
If I did,
I hope I heard wrong.
And Alaska Senator Ted Stevens' chances of winning re-election just went down the big truck.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Wow. And what do you know? I made it through a whole week in 90 seconds without saying Sarah Palin. Go!
You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull.
Yeah, a pit bull doesn't make any more noise after you humanely put it down. Oh, and in other news, in this news only important to myself, the Radical Russ family, my middle brother, Matty Kachu, the last of the Red Hot Kachu Boys, is getting married in Boise, Idaho today to the lovely Jennifer. That's right. The ceremony is being officiated by my father, the newly ordained Rockin' Reverend Johnny B. of the Universal Life Church. So congratulations to my brother Matt and Jennifer. Happy wedding day to you. I wish I could be there. I'm here behind the microphone talking to the continent, so I can't be there, unfortunately. So,
congratulations from, everyone at the Russ Belville Show, which is me as well, I suppose. And from all the little radicals.
Yeah, from both of us. Congratulations. Yeah, I hope they have a good wedding, and I love the idea that my father is now a reverend. I'm an atheist, and my dad is a reverend. That's a beautiful thing. I love it. Well, we're going to be taking your calls coming up here at 888-7-RADICAL. We're going to be talking about the Proposition 8 protests that are taking place all around the country today. The gay rights movement has called up all of its supporters and allies to protest at city halls And also, a lot of the protests are taking place at Mormon churches. We're going to dig into that and take a look at the Mormon influence on Prop 8 and the anti-gay marriage amendment out there in California. When we come back, we've got Matt in Traverse City, Michigan, and a few other people hanging out on the line at 888-7-RADICAL. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is The Russ Belville Show.
Call the Radical Hotline at 1-888-772-3422. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. 21 after the hour, and we are talking about the Proposition 8 that passed in California. That is our big story of the day.
Now it's time for the big story.
My, what a big story.
Thanks.
Now here's Radical Russ.
That's right. The Proposition 8 protests that are taking place today all across the country as led by gay rights groups. And this comes in the heels of the New York Times most recent report that out of the $40 million in donations that the Yes on Prop 8, the anti-gay marriage forces, the $40 million of donations that were given, half of those total $40 million donations were donated by Mormons. That's right. The Mormon involvement in Proposition 8 was extremely large, extremely a lot of an involvement by the Mormon Church, even by the Mormon Church's standards. In that New York Times story, we get a quote here from Michael R. Otterson, who's the managing director for public affairs of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is what the Mormons are called formally. And by his quote, he says, "We've spoken out on other issues, we've spoken out on abortion, we've spoken out on those other kinds of things, but we didn't get involved to the degree we did on this." So even by the Mormon standards, the gay marriage issue in California was a huge issue for them. And we also find out not only was there monetary support in the form of half of the $40 million that came from Mormons, but also boots on the ground. We find out that Mormons were 80 to 90% of the early volunteers to be doing, you know, walking through neighborhoods and doing phone banking and such. After they received, the Mormon leadership in Salt Lake issued a four-paragraph letter that was read to all the congregations saying that the formation of families is central to the Creator's plan and urging members to become involved with the cause. 80 to 90% of the early volunteers who walked door-to-door in election precincts came from the Mormon Church. Also, we find that one lead Mormon, a person by the name of Ashton, who is the co-founder of the Word Perfect Corporation in Orem, Utah, donated $1 million to the Yes on 8 campaign, saying he was following his personal beliefs and the direction of the church. So, what do you think about Mormon involvement in this Proposition 8 campaign? Is it a freedom of speech issue? Do the churches have the freedom of speech to be able to say anything they want and motivate their members any way they want? Or is this an unconstitutional breach of the wall between church and state? I'm interested in your opinions on this at 888-7-RADICAL. Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Matt from Traverse City, Michigan. And Matt, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, good afternoon, Russ. Well, I didn't really call up about that, but I will have to say it. It seems to me somebody needs to lose their tax-exempt status.
Yeah.
If they're going to take that aggressive an approach on a proposition. And I had a question about,
sure,
locally here in Michigan, we had a stem cell initiative, which fortunately passed. And I don't know what the law is, but on every single church property that belonged to the Catholic Church especially, they had these no-on-two signs right on the property. And I meant to call the ACLU to find out if that's legal or not.
Mm.
And I know they were also, the Knights of Columbus were also instrumental in paying for the ads against this proposition, too.
Yeah, yeah. The Knights of Columbus, that's the Catholic organization, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so
I definitely like to see the LDS Church lose its tax-exempt status if they're going to take that kind of strong-arm approach on a on the gay marriage issue.
I'd like to see something like that too, although I don't think the chances of it happening are very good. I mean, it's a murky issue because churches do have their freedom of speech rights. They do have the right to be able to, you know, preach from the pulpit anything they want to say. They can say, you know, that homosexuality is an abomination. They can say stem cells are, you know, killing womb babies, whatever they want to say. You know, they have that free speech right. But boy, when you start putting so much effort and money into these propositions, you know, I found one, looking through the net on this, I found one organization that is asking the California Elections Department whether or not the Mormon Church has violated laws by not indicating how much money and effort they put into this. Any of these like-kind donations of property or work or, you know, where they, all of these things have to be reported when you contribute them to a proposition campaign under the California election rules. As far as Michigan and the stem cell thing, I think that falls along the same lines. You know, I think all this stuff's great when it's inside the church walls, but once churchy wants to start playing in the secular pool, I think churchy needs to start paying the secular bills. You know what I'm saying?
No, I absolutely agree, and I don't, frankly, have a problem with pastors, even though many people do politicize it from the pulpit. I just think it's more or less unenforceable. But when you can actually trace the money that's going into a certain proposition or against a candidate, that's when they lose their status, because that is traceable and that is enforceable, and that's where the line should be drawn. But I don't see that happening, and this leads to what I called about, which is, I'm, as an Obama volunteer, I'm increasingly disappointed in the direction that his campaign seems to be going.
Mm, yeah, some of the latest appointments have kind of bothered me a little bit. You know, Rahm Emanuel had a lot of problems with some of his actions in the Clinton administration. We're seeing some of the staff people that he's picking that I don't know if they really represent the kind of change I'm looking for. Something we're going to keep an eye on here in the next couple of weeks as the transition team's announced and the cabinet picks are announced. But Matt, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that opinion. We'll get some more opinions here at 888-7 Radical. And yeah, as far as this this Mormon Church bashing, you know, the Mormon Church now is coming out and some of their leaders are saying, well, we want to work together and can't we all get along? We don't want to see so much hate. Well, sorry, folks, you opened up the hate genie bottle. You guys are the ones that got behind a proposition that wasn't even in your own state. You had people from Utah and Idaho manning phone banks to call people in California to vote against something that wasn't even in your own state. And if you're going to bring out the hate card, you can't, and if you're going to bring out the free speech card, you can't cry foul when other people hate you for your free speech and exhibit their free speech to tell you what they think of your free speech. Yeah. And you know what? But let's not come down so much on the Mormons on this necessarily. They did what they thought was right. Let's talk a little bit about the gay rights movement itself. You know, we're seeing a lot of action now. We're seeing a lot of protests now. We're seeing a lot of people in the streets now. Where was all this support and anger before, when people's votes could have been changed, when some of the conversations could have happened? Where was all that action and activity back then? That's something I want to know about. Now, this anti-gay movement, this Prop 8 anti-Prop 8 movement here is starting to gain a lot of momentum. And one of the things they're looking at now is boycotting the state of Utah and all its tourism, which, okay, there's a lot of great people in Utah. And I'm telling you, Arches National Park and some of that stuff in South Utah is something every American should see. It's some beautiful parkland and such. I don't know if I'm so behind that, right? The idea of boycotting the entire state of Utah, because even though Utah is like about 70% Mormon, you can't blame the whole state. I do like the way they're looking at boycotting the Marriott hotel chain, since it's run and owned by the Mormon Church in a large degree, and the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. That'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But let's get more of your opinions at 888-7-RADICAL. The phone lines are open. Let's have a talk about it. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? Huh? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
As you can see, playing Bond is a piece of piss. See how I did it in Thunderball. You wanted to see me, M.
And then see how I did it in Moonraker. You wanted to see me, M. Notice how I added humor and irony to the part.
Yes, and notice how I was usually the best.
Double R7, license to think. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. 35 after the hour. We're talking about Prop 8 in California and the protests this weekend over Prop 8 that are taking place at city halls, Mormon churches, and Marriott hotels, and the Sundance Film Festival, and all sorts of places now that the gay folks and their allies have decided to protest against Prop 8, taking away the right to marriage for gay and lesbian people in the state of California.
I'm not gay, but I'll learn.
Yeah, okay. So this is this has been confirmed by the New York Times. Of the $40 million that were given to the Yes on Prop 8 campaign, half of it came from the Mormon Church. And so there's a lot of anti-Mormon protests that is going on these days. And I'm just wondering if you think it's right, wrong, or what do you think the proper way to go about this would be for the gay and lesbian community to stand up for their rights? The phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL if you're interested in getting involved. And the funny thing about this is that, you know, these hate mongers on the right, these people that are so homophobic about this gay marriage issue, it's amazing the things they will believe. It's amazing the talking points that were disseminated throughout this campaign that they will just so readily believe. I was watching The View, and Elizabeth Hasselbeck and Sherry Shepherd, you know, that genius who thinks Jesus came before the Romans and the earth was created 6,000 years ago. Anyway,
it's still flat as well, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So the two of them were discussing this Prop 8 thing. And they kept talking about how if Prop 8 didn't pass, then preachers would be jailed for preaching against homosexuality in church. That was one of the talking points that came through from this heavily funded Mormon campaign, is that somehow if Prop 8 didn't pass and gay marriage was legal, if preachers preached against it in church, they would be sued for hate speech violations and thrown in jail. Yeah. And these righties, where they get this from, they always like to point to this. I think it was Sweden where this happened, where they have a very, very strict code about, you know, what you can and can't say about religion and other people. And somebody in some preacher in Sweden got arrested or something. Right. So because it happened in Sweden, it's bound to happen in America with the slippery slope that these right wing religious types tend to believe. Look, y'all need to get over your fear of the gay people. Gay marriage is going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to pass. By the time when I'm in my 70s, we'll be looking back at the fight against gay marriage like I look now at the fight against interracial marriage in the 60s. It's a civil right. And I think what the religious people don't understand, and they cannot separate, you know, because in their minds, they can't separate church and state anyway. So they can't separate the idea of a religious marriage versus a civil marriage. Now, if I had my way on this, nobody would be married by the government. Here, you want a radical solution? No marriage. No government-recognized marriage. Make them all civil unions. You know, man and a woman want to get a government-recognized civil union, or a woman and a woman, or a man and a man, fine. Two people can enter a government-recognized contractual civil union. And at that, why not have different types of civil unions too? Why not have some civil unions that are for life? Why not have some civil unions that are like your license plate tags, where you have to renew them every 5 years or something like that? Why not have the government civil institution of marriage represent the people that need it? Why don't we make the institution match the people rather than trying to force the people to match the institution? And it's like these right wingers, these religious types, like to come across and say, you know, marriage is a holy sacrament and it's the way God wanted it and it's never been changed. And we all know that's BS too. You just go get their book. Go read your Bible. Go look back into Old Testament. Look at all of the polygamy. In fact, for most human societies throughout history, polygamy has been the norm, not monogamy. monogamy is a fairly recent invention in world history. Over the past maybe, you know, 400 or 500 years, has monogamy been something serious and not polygamy? So don't give me this claptrap about, you know, we can't change marriage, that it would somehow spoil the sanctity of marriage. And speaking of the sanctity of marriage, you know these religious people, you know these anti-gay, these pro-Prop 8 type people, you know that they don't really mean the sanctity of marriage when they say the sanctity of marriage. You want to talk about the sanctity of marriage, you'd talk about eliminating, you'd make adultery a crime. If you want to talk about the sanctity of marriage, you'd eliminate no-fault divorce, right? But no, we can't have that. No, we can't have that, because then all of the Republican leaders of these religious right people, with their multiple divorces and their multiple adultery, there'd be a little bit of a problem there, wouldn't there? That's why I've got this big problem with this Prop 8. And as far as the Mormon Church's involvement in it, there's been two groups that have been looked at here in this involvement in this Prop 8. One has been the African-American community, and a lot of reports came out after the Prop 8 vote that 70% of the black community voted for Prop 8. But again, that misses the big point. And the big point is that the black community is very religious. And it's the religious affiliation that caused people to vote for Prop 8. When we look at the exit polls, people that go to church more than once a week or once a week, overwhelmingly, like over 80% voted for Prop 8. While the people who don't go to church or consider themselves non-religious voted against Prop 8, about 80%. So it's really about religion here. Let's get the whole black thing out of the way. It has to do more with the black people that are religious. But then when it comes to this protest, with all the gay and lesbian community and their allies protesting against the Mormon Church and protesting at their temples, does that solve the problem, really? Do you really think that it's going to make any difference if the gay people protest in front of the Mormon Church? I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the look of it. I like the way it looks. I like that people are getting angry and standing up for their rights. Who knows? Maybe it does work. I mean, the Mormon Church does have this history of suddenly receiving revelations from God when they find themselves on the wrong side of a social issue. Yeah, not telling tales out of school here. I grew up Mormon. I grew up in the state of Idaho. I know a lot about the Mormon Church's history. We can just look back to the 1890s when the Mormon leaders were so pro-polygamy. We've got to have polygamy. Polygamy is the way God wants it to be. God said that we should have polygamy. Oh, what's that? We can't be a state unless we get rid of polygamy? Well, guess what? Suddenly there was a revelation from God that said, you know that whole polygamy thing? Yeah, not so much anymore. Yeah, so when it was politically convenient to become a state, suddenly the Mormon religion had a revelation. We can look forward to the 1960s when Martin Luther King was leading the civil rights movement. And at that time, black people, under the Mormon doctrine, were considered the sons of Cain. They bore the mark of Cain. Their black skin meant that they were evil. And so that was kind of a problem during the civil rights era. There was a lot of protests about that, too. And what do you know? Suddenly, the church president had a revelation from God. You know that thing about the black people? Not so much anymore. So maybe there's a precedent here. Maybe with enough public protest and maybe with people's minds changing about the nature of gay people and gay relationships, maybe we'll get lucky and the church president will have another one of those fantastic revelations that says, you know that stuff about the gay people? Not so much. We can always hope, can't we? Well, the phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. We'll be taking more of your calls as we come around the bend. But in our next segment, we're going to be talking about bringing you our Lunatic Fringe Awards. We got some great Lunatic Fringery this time, so stick around for it. In our Lunatic Fringe, you're going to learn how liberal women hate Sarah Palin because she has a great sex life. You'll learn how welfare is a lot like slavery. And you'll learn that Obama's dead grandmother has something to hide. And a special bonus, Joe Scarborough F's up. That's coming up next on the Lunatic Fringe here at the Russ Belville Show. Stick around. It's your home for truly radical progressives.
Run! The homosexuals are coming! Only Rodan can save us now!
Despite the existence of Glenn Beck,
We still believe in evolution. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. 48 after the hour. It's time for the Lunatic Fringe. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. Oh, we got a whole stable full of lunatic fringery. Let's get right to it. We're going to start off with a guy who used to be funny. That's right, Dennis Miller, formerly of Saturday Night Live, back in the day when he was funny, is a regular guest on the Bill O'Reilly program, and he was talking with Bill about Sarah Palin, and they were discussing why the people on the left hate Sarah Palin. Dennis has an interesting theory.
I think the left hate her, mostly women on the left hate her, because to me, from outside in, it appears that she has a great sex life, all right? I think she has non-neurotic sex with that Todd Palin guy, so they look at her and they hate her. I think that snowmobile looks like mechanized foreplay to me, and that's why people are fascinated.
So you think that...
Yeah, Dennis, that's why people on the left hate Sarah Palin, is because she has such a great sex life. You know, when my wife and I were looking over the candidates, you know, I said, honey, as a woman, what do you look for in a candidate? And I said, do you look for whether or not she has a good grasp of the foreign policy issues or whether she's strong on domestic policies? And she says, no, honey, I look at whether or not she has a good sex life. If she has a great sex life, boy, I won't vote for her.
Also, Dennis Miller, that's a pretty serious perversion you got going on there. You're attracted to snowmobiles?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. That's a little scary there.
Get out and about. Meet people.
I guess so. But we're not going to give the award to Dennis for that one. Let's go, because I think he was trying to make a joke there. So let's go to our new favorite friend, Jim Quinn from the Quinn and Rose Show. He just got in trouble last week for talking about welfare recipients, and in trying to address that issue, says even more heinous things about welfare recipients. You just have to listen to believe it.
If you were a slave in the Old South, what did you get as a slave? You got free room and board, you got free money, and you got rewarded for having children, because that was just, you know, tomorrow's slave. Can I ask a question? How's that different from welfare? You get a free house, you get free food, and you get rewarded for having children. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. There is a difference. The slave had to work for it. You know, but when you think about it, the slave had more personal nobility than the welfare recipient, because he or she had no say in their station in life. The welfare recipient actually volunteers for it. It is the liberal plantation.
Yeah, that's Jim Quinn talking about how welfare recipients are worse than slaves, because they choose to get the free food and the free room and board and get rewarded for having kids.
Wow.
Yeah, let me give you a couple of other differences, Jim. For one, last I checked, welfare recipients couldn't be raped by their master. I don't believe welfare recipients had to endure a 6-month ride in the belly of a ship where half of them would die. And last I checked, it was still against the law to whip and beat welfare recipients. So maybe there's a little difference there. Okay, let me go to this third one here. Our good friend, the man named Wiener from San Francisco,
Wiener.
Michael Savage.
Wiener.
who's still this week, even after getting spanked at the ballot box, as far as his candidate goes, John McCain, still has unanswered questions about Barack Obama.
Well, we don't even know where Obama was born. His grandmother died the night before the election. There's a lot of questions around this character that the media won't answer. Let's start with what country he's from. Why was the birth certificate never produced? Why in the world did he take time off from the campaign to visit the grandmother, who then suddenly and suspiciously died virtually the night before the election? Tell me about that.
I don't know what to tell you on that one there, Michael.
Baby needs his bottle.
Yeah, baby needs a bottle. Absolutely. Yeah,
Michael needs a cookie.
Here, I'll just answer him real quick. Obama was born in Hawaii, which is part of the United States. He produced his birth certificate, and his grandmother died. No suspicion behind it, and what a jerk you are for bringing it up that way. But our winner today, I got to go to our winner because when I saw this on the net, I didn't get to see it live on TV, but I saw it on the net, and it was so much fun. Oh, boy. This is multi-layered, so let me get you right into it. This is Joe Scarborough on the TV show Morning Joe, which airs early in the morning while mothers and fathers are getting their kids ready for school.
But these are good, decent, steady men that don't go around flipping people off or screaming you at the top of their lungs.
Whoa. Yes, I had to bleep it because I'm on the radio and I don't want to fine. But yes, he actually did say the F word on live cable television. And it was so funny after it happened because you should have seen the look on Mike Barnicle's face as soon as he said it. He had him in split screen. And everybody's look was just, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. You can kind of hear it as Mika Brzezinski, his co-host, tries to let him know that he kind of made a mistake.
I suggest that you missed the Jay Carney story. Now, that was a Jay Carney story.
I didn't use the word.
honey.
Yeah, honey. Now, as this clip goes on, they turn to some other guests, and the other guests are speaking. And you can hear in the background, if you really listen closely, you can hear Joe Scarborough saying, "Did I say F?"
Let me ask Chuck Joe, you know, what he thinks the prospects are for my belief, as it is his belief, as he just articulated it.
Did I say F?
It is his belief.
Did I say F?
Yes, you effing did.
And then later on, as they go to Mike Barnicle talking, Joe wants to know whether or not he got bleeped.
What happens to Harry Reid and Speaker Pelosi when they find out through Rahm Emanuel that the President of the United States is much more moderate and pragmatic than they expect them to be?
Did you hear that?
Did they bleep it?
Here it is. Did they bleep it? No, they didn't bleep it, Joe. So they come back around after that discussion, and Joe finally comes around with his mea culpa.
Although, let me call a timeout.
Yeah, you go.
Yes.
No, you meant to say the one. You meant to say.
I may have been the one on Ambien. If I actually said the word instead, did I say the word or did I say what Jay Carney said?
You meant to say the letter, but we should clarify and apologize if everyone heard it that way.
The letter. Jay Carney had told a story earlier about a conversation.
Didn't use the word, but it was off air.
And, yeah.
It's fine. Okay, apologize, move on.
So I repeated. So great apologies. If I said the word instead of the letter.
Okay, now here we've set it up, right? So he says the F word live on the air. Now, personally, I don't have much of a problem with that. I could care less. You know, say seven dirty words, I don't care. What I care about is the hypocrisy. We go back to February 2, 2004, right after the Super Bowl, when Scarborough was on the TV slamming the FCC for allowing Janet Jackson's boob to escape. Yeah, here's his quote from the show. He says, "But I've got to say that the problem was not just being exposed to Janet Jackson, but being exposed to the F-bomb several times from rock stars at award shows, from actresses at award shows. Unbelievable." Then, in his little press stunt, 2 days later, he collected emails from all his angry listeners, angry about Janet Jackson's escaping Mocha Mamory, and took it all to Washington, D.C. to show to all the officials and to scream about how we're not keeping track of the F-word on TV. In 2003, when Bono said the F word live on TV, he went nuts and said, "This FCC has gone this far and people can say F word and the government would approve it." In 2006, he got upset about Barbara Streisand saying she had a Bush bashing shtick that had the angry F bomb and we got to do something about Barbara Streisand and we've got to fine these people. They've got to be fined. So Joe Scarborough, for demonstrating both the mouth and the hypocrisy of your typical Republican, you are the winner of this week's Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. Big thanks out to Glenn Greenwald at Salon.com. He collected all of those hypocrisy points there from Joe Scarborough. Yeah, amazing how these guys that scream so much about actors and entertainers and all these people saying the F word, and yet he won't apply that own standard to himself. Now, his show just has been given a 7-second delay now, and it should also be noted the irony that Joe Scarborough only has that Morning Joe show because Don Imus got kicked out of the same slot for saying bad things on the air. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're going to talk more about that Prop 8. I've got Dave in Michigan holding on the phone who disagrees with me. We'll get that conversation right after the news. Stick around.
Live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Good day and welcome to hour two of the Russ Belville Show. 5 hours worth of show and only 2 hours worth of show to get it in. And hey, glad to have you here. Phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. We're having ourselves a good time here on the radio talking a little bit about this Proposition 8 and the anti-gay marriage movement in America. The gay and lesbian community has called on all of their allies to protest today across the country at city halls, and some other people are protesting Mormon churches and other locations to display their anger over this Proposition 8, taking away the rights of 18,000 married gay couples in the state of California by popular vote. It's an amazing thing. I can't believe it even was allowed to be on the ballot in this country. But we'll get to that discussion here at 888-7-RADICAL. Before we do, I also want to note, speaking of the Mormon Church and the fact that I'm originally from the state of Idaho, I had to bring up this little story that came from KIKD News in Rexburg, Idaho. Now, you got to understand, Rexburg, Idaho is the home to an affiliate of Brigham Young University. I think it's BYU North, they call it now. Back in the day, it was called Ricks College back when I lived in Idaho. But anyway, out there in KIKD News is reporting in Madison County, Idaho, that young children, second and third graders on a school bus in Idaho, were found chanting "Assassinate Obama" on the school bus there in Idaho. So what's up with this Mormon church stuff going on here? Fighting against the gays, getting the school kids to chant "Assassinate Obama." What's going on with that? I'm going to get your opinions on it here at 888-7-RADICAL. And hanging on the phone here and being quite a gentleman for hanging on the phone as long as he did, I'm going to go to to Fort Michigan, Michigan, and we're going to speak with Dave. And Dave, welcome to the show.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I understand you disagree with my points about the Mormon Church and the Prop 8. Tell me why.
I don't disagree with your position. I disagree with the way you present your position. One, I'd like to say first off that I just stumbled upon your radio station, and this is the first time I've listened to it, and I'm just amazed at the claptrap that you spew forth.
Okay, give me one real quick. We can talk
unfounded. About. Now let me go on with my point.
Go ahead.
My point is that number one, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is an incorporated entity. It's not tax exempt. It pays taxes.
Hold on. That is absolutely false. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is a 501c3 corporation, a tax-exempt corporation according to the U.S. Title 26. Corporations organized and operated exclusively for religious purposes may have no substantial part of their activities to carry on propaganda, otherwise attempting or to influence legislation. But go on. What's the other claptrap?
Only the property underneath the buildings, it falls under that. The church itself is an incorporated entity.
Okay, so if within the buildings themselves... Hold on, let's discuss this. Within the buildings themselves, which you are now telling me are part of the tax-exempt organization, they send out a letter to all of their churches in these buildings that are tax-exempt telling their people to vote against a proposition. How is that not a violation of 501c3?
They did not encourage their people to vote. The church put out what was in part and parcel an excerpt of another document that was put out called A Proclamation on the Family. I believe that was put out in 1994.
Okay, let me read it to you. This is, hold on again, this is my show. Let me read this to you. This is the letter that went out from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to all the church leaders in California to be read to all of the congregations on the 29th of July, 2008. And in their final paragraph, they say, "We ask that you do all you can to support the proposed constitutional amendment by donating of your means, money, and time to assure that marriage in California is legally defined as being between a man and a woman. Our best efforts are required to preserve this sacred institution of marriage." How is that not the church telling their people to go give money to support the Prop 8 amendment?
We all within the church have our agency. We can be encouraged to do things just like we're encouraged to pray daily or to read our scriptures daily. There's no insistence that anybody don't do this.
Okay, now I'm with you on that. If the church wants to tell you to pray daily and read your scriptures daily, then you can have your tax-exempt status. If you want the church to be telling you how to vote, you lose your tax-exempt status. You want to play in the secular pool, start playing the secular bills.
Which I contend they do.
Okay, so what's your disagreement then? All right, Dave. Dave, thanks for your call. We're going to have to move on here because I think we've kind of trashed, gone over this. Go ahead.
One was that that the Marriott family, the hotel chain, happens to be owned by a family named Marriott that just happened to be Mormons, and the church doesn't have anything to do with that operation.
True enough, but the people that own the Marriott, hold on again, please. Once again, the people that own that Marriott church were large donors to the Prop 8 campaign. So whether they're Mormon or not, I can see why the gays would be protesting against Marriott.
And they, my third point
okay.
is, along with all the rest of the people that contributed money, were exercising their individual constitutional rights to the political system as it's established in this nation.
Okay, so do you have any problem with the gay protesters protesting the Marriott by using their constitutional rights?
No.
Okay, good. All right.
However, they're using violent, illegal methods to protest. The people of the church that contributed money did so legally and peacefully and well within their constitutional rights.
I completely agree.
The screaming left that you so well exemplify would just create anarchy. They'd just love to go in and burn the buildings down just because they have a difference of opinion.
I don't think so. I don't think anybody's talking about burning down churches.
Look at the news. That's what they want to do.
Aha. Okay. Want to burn down churches. That seems a little extreme to me, but I don't think that's happening. But how would you expect people... Let me ask you a question. Are you married?
Certainly.
Are you married, Dave?
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Okay. So you're married. So if someone came and took your marriage rights away, would you be angry?
Let me offer you this. I have a gay son.
No. If someone came and took your marriage rights away, would you be angry? You are legally married right now, as were 18,000 gay couples in the state of California who were legally married, and their rights were just taken away. Now, regardless of what you think about gay marriage or if you have a gay son or whatever, people who have a right just got that right taken away.
Well, you know, I think our conversation at this point is going to go deeper than you want to let it, but what I would... at least begin to say, is this country was founded on God-given Christian biblical...
That is a lie, too, sir. That is absolutely a lie. This country was founded by Thomas Paine, who was an atheist, Thomas Jefferson, who was a deist, Benjamin Franklin, who was an agnostic. It is not a Christian nation, no matter how much your preacher tells you it was.
And all of them prayed before they engaged in the activities that they...
They absolutely did. They prayed, and then they set up a secular constitution, which specifically says there shall be no religious test for office, and specifically says there shall be a separation between church and state. You're right. This conversation is going to go much deeper than you can afford it to get because you are on shaky ground, my friend. We got to round it up here. I'm up against a break. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. And if you want to get your phone call in here, the phone number is 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. And even if you disagree with me, please please give me a call. I got no problem making this discussion happen, but you can't come at me with your talk, your 6 second Fox and preacher sound bites here that have no basis in fact. Go read your Constitution. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
Agent 007, running surveillance on Red Wing Radio so you don't have to. It's messy. This is the Russ Belville Show.
That's right, and all I need is just a little quantum of solace. Not a whole bunch of solace, just a quantum will do me. Welcome back to the show. Hey, look at the clock, everybody. It's 20 after the hour. And that means it's time for our Marijuana Minute, the minute where we tell you what's happening in cannabis news throughout the country because nobody else will tell you. We told you about Michigan passing medical marijuana last election day by 63%. New news as we uncover some of the election results from Michigan. As we look through it county by county, all 83 counties in the state of Michigan passed medical marijuana. It did not fail in a single county. Even the counties that voted for John W. McCain voted in favor of medical marijuana in the state of Michigan. And that is your Marijuana Minute. Now, we can get back to this story we've been talking about here at 888-7 Radical. We've been talking about this Prop 8 thing, and tell you what, I'm going to put the letter, the four-paragraph letter that was ordered read to every Mormon church in America and throughout the world. I'll put those four paragraphs up online at RadicalRuss.com, and you too can just check out and decide whether or not that's a 501c3 tax-exempt violation. But let's go to the phone calls at 888-7-RADICAL, and we've got Tom in Bozeman, Montana. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Tom. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to make a point that I think is a fairly simple one, but I haven't heard it yet, about constitutional rights and how they are supposed to be designed to protect us against the tyranny of the majority.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something wrong with the system in California that allows a constitutional right to be taken away by popular vote, because I think that just sort of is antithetical to the whole concept of a constitutional right to begin with.
I think you're right, Tom, and that's what makes this California situation so different than the others, is that, you know, they banned gay marriage in Florida and Arizona this time around too, but those two states didn't have gay marriage. You know, they banned it ahead of time. Right. Here in California, or over in California, I should say, they already had it. It was already a right. This is the first time any state has ever voted to remove a right from the people, from its constitution. And the challenges that are coming up lately on this are following your lead on this, Tom. They're actually saying there's some challenges now, legal challenges, that say you can't have a majority vote on a constitutional right. Like you say, otherwise, what's the point of the constitution?
That's the whole point. I think even people that might be on the more on the right wing side of this issue than you or I would be should worry about the idea of being able to rescind a civil right simply by a majority vote.
Well, I mean, what are we going to vote on next? You know, what maybe people in Alabama decide that they don't like black people and white people getting married anymore, and they're going to vote on that? I mean, where does it stop if you can vote on what people's rights are? That's the problem I've got with this. And
me too. I would like to, you know, ideally I'd like to see it decided by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, that's what's going to have to happen, Tom, and thank you for your call. I appreciate you calling in on this. You know, that's what's going to have to happen, is because this is going to continue to be a patchwork throughout the states. I mean, we got New York, which will recognize gay marriage but not perform them. We've got Vermont, which has civil unions. We've got Connecticut and Massachusetts that will perform gay marriage. You can't have a patchwork of civil rights from state to state. Did we not learn our lessons from the Civil War, you know, and the 14th Amendment here? All rights have to exist across the spectrum, all the way across all of the states. This has to be solved at the federal level. I implore the incoming Obama administration to make a positive stand for the rights of gays and lesbians in this country. Enough is enough. What are we going to be, the United States of America here? Or are we going to be Saudi Arabia? Are we going to be Iran? Are we going to be kind of country that shuns people that are different? I don't think so. All right. Now, we are a little behind the schedule here. I had originally scheduled this interview to take place right now, but let's get right to it. I'm all wrapped up in this Prop 8 stuff. I can't stop. Hold on just a second. Okay, every week here at the Russ Belleville Show, we sift through the headlines to find the stories buried in the back pages or ignored on the evening news. Stories our citizens and our leaders need to hear. In this segment, we go under the radar. Oh boy, like I said, I'm all wrapped up. I got so wrapped up in that call from Michigan, I kind of lost track of time. But I want to thank our guest who's joining us here, Josh. Josh, would you say your last name for me?
Sure, it's Tickell.
Tickell. I was going to say Tickle, and I know that can't be right. So, okay, Josh Tickell, who is the director of a new documentary film called Fuel, a movie called Fuel, and it's premiering right here in my hometown of Portland, Oregon, all this weekend, Friday through Sunday. Is that at the Fox Tower? Is that right?
The Fox Tower downtown. You've got it.
Yeah, Fox Tower downtown here in Portland, Oregon. A great place to premiere this documentary about Fuel. Tell our listeners a little bit about what your documentary is about.
Well, I think a lot of people hear Fuel or they hear environmental documentary and they think, God, I've been there. I've done that. I watched An Inconvenient Truth, or I watched Who Killed the Electric Car. Maybe I saw both of them. And maybe if I was a glutton for punishment, I went to see The 11th Hour with Leonardo DiCaprio. and people just groan. This is a completely different kind of movie. Fuel is a movie that was really spawned from the green movement. You know, we're talking about people who, like Paul Hawken, huge thinkers that have been working on the issue of sustainability for decades. That's the philosophy that has borne this movie forth. So it's a powerful film in that it's a film about what happened to America. You know, what happened to the money, what happened to the government, what happened to our energy, what happened to our vision of a sustainable society and a society that was democratic. And it's a powerful film about what can happen and what needs to happen. What can happen with energy solutions? What can happen with our government? What can happen with corporations? What's possible? You know, and I don't mean in the possibility sort of sense of the word, like, you know, it's possible that a meteor will hit the planet. But what's possible within the current technology and the current money that we have? So it's an inspiring movie. It's a movie about hope. It's a movie about change. And it's a movie about the green energy future that we've been talking about for decades here in this nation.
Well, I'd encourage everyone to check out the film. It's Fuel. It's appearing at the Fox Tower Theaters here in Portland, Oregon, all this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And after the Portland showings, where next? Are you getting a wider release?
We're basically going city by city to begin. You know, okay. We're going from Portland to Seattle and Austin. We open Seattle and Austin on the 21st of November, and then on back up here to the Northwest to Olympia and Bend. And that will complete this little segment right before Christmas.
Oh, that's great. You know, and looking for these solutions for sustainable fuel in our future, you know, the news lately, you know, we've seen the gas prices have gone, you know, last year they were up to around $4 and so now in my neck of the woods they're around $2.20. I really worry about the American people losing focus on this. You know, everybody got real focused on it when it was $4 a gallon, and now that the prices are going back down, I wonder if people are going to lose their focus. Do you sense that?
I definitely sense that. And what people don't realize is, you know, the energy companies are so powerful. They have the ability to raise and lower prices on a dime. And with the crash of the stock market, the number one thing that they could do to ensure their stock price wouldn't drop is to lower the price of gas. And so here we've got exceptionally cheap gas under an economic crisis. And if you look at the S&P 500, Standard & Poor 500, the major companies that we really invest in this country, the ones that are doing the best right now are ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco.
Oh, yeah, we've seen
that's
Exxon.
That's not an accident.
Yeah,
that's
we've seen Exxon have world record profits over the past five quarters, like $14.63 billion in profit. You know, Josh, I want to talk more about this. Can you stick with us through the break into the next segment?
I'll be here. Excellent. Here for you.
We also want to take your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. If you've got questions for Josh Tickell, the director of the movie Fuel, want to talk about energy policy in America, bring it on up. This is the Russ Belville Show, 888-7-RADICAL. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. Belville Show.
Hey, welcome back. 35 after the hour, Fuel by Metallica. What a perfect song for our interview here. We're still speaking with Josh Tickell, who's the director of the new documentary film Fuel, which is premiering here in Portland, Oregon at the Fox Tower Theaters Friday through Sunday this weekend. Check it out. And Josh, thanks for hanging on with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me there.
Well, we were talking about your movie Fuel and looking at Americans and their will to come up with a way for a sustainable energy policy in this country. And we had left with the concept of, you know, the fuel prices coming down here to the $2 range and whether or not that's going to cause people to kind of lose their focus. I'd also like to let our listeners know if you want to ask any questions of Josh, our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. We'll take your questions here. The lines are open right now. And Josh, you made a really good point as we left in the last segment about how these energy companies are so free to be able to manipulate their prices in order to sustain their business. What other things did you learn in making this movie about the energy companies that maybe our average listeners might not know about?
Well, you know, a lot of amazing things in the Fuel film come from the journey that we take. And we take a journey across the U.S. and around the world. The film takes place. It took 11 years to make the film, and it's a personal journey. It starts with my personal history of growing up in Louisiana, watching members of my family get sick, and some of them die from pollution from the oil refineries there. So a lot of what we uncover in the first half of the movie is what's really going on behind the scenes with our energy. And it's a Matrix-like world. I mean, you really take a red pill when you watch Fuel because the world that's revealed is not the world that you see. You know, for instance, it looks like gas is very cheap right now. That is an illusion that the energy companies are putting forth to make sure that their stock prices stay high. So the cost of fuel and the price of fuel are completely unrelated. Yeah. And that's very important for people to get, because when you begin to really fall into the matrix of, wow, what does it really look like on the other side? What it really looks like is everything about our lives is very carefully controlled by energy. And it all starts with the price of fuel. So in a time like this, when people are very nervous about the economy, you know, imagine the power of the entities that can lower the price at the gas station to make sure that you feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of power. And we go through that power matrix, and we go through Washington, D.C., and we see how interlocked the energy companies are into the policy and politics, like the actual policy, how it's written, what's written, when it's passed, who passes it, of the United States of America. And, you know, one of the most powerful segments of the film is I'm speaking with Bobby Kennedy Jr., who is the son of Bobby Kennedy Sr., who was the senator who ran for president, who was shot at the Ambassador Hotel, and Bobby Kennedy Jr. is also the nephew of JFK. So we're sitting there, and he says, you know, we have put oil in front of the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an epic moment. It's a come-to-Jesus moment. It's a religious moment in the movie.
Yeah.
Because you've just spent the first half of the movie really watching, wow, this is what's going on in Detroit. This is why we're trying to bail these guys out. This is what's going on in the government. This is what's going on in Louisiana where they produce the gasoline. Wow. It's a yeah. whole other world.
And I think I think a lot of people in their gut get this, Josh. And again, we're speaking with Josh Tickell, who's the director of the movie Fuel, premiering here in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I think people get that at the base level. I know myself. I remember watching those gas prices rise. You know, get up to $3.25, $3.50, $3.75. Once it started hitting the point where we were seeing people drive less miles on the freeways and actually start to buy more fuel efficient cars, suddenly that price just kind of topped out and started falling. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. And meanwhile, you know, ExxonMobil had put $40 billion into their bank account to hold as reserve. So, you know, there's a game that they play, which is let's charge more money when we can get away with it. And when the economy starts to shrink as a result of what we've done, you know, people have to understand there is a direct link between energy and the economy. The dollar is based on nothing more than our ability to produce energy. That's it. There's no gold standard anymore. That doesn't exist. You know, that was abolished in the 50s. So money is based on energy. And in the U.S., as the economy constricts and shrinks and kind of shrivels, what's actually going on is our ability to procure and produce energy is shrinking and shriveling.
Mm-hmm.
And the oil companies were very clear. They understood that, which is why they made this last run at profits, because they knew they were going to need that money to survive what was coming.
Yeah. We're speaking with Josh Tickell, who's the director of the Fuel movie, the documentary called Fuel, premiering at the Fox Tower Theaters in Portland this weekend. And looking to the future, Josh, what do we do to get out from under this? I mean, you say that the only thing that props up the dollar is our ability to create energy. A lot of people here talk about creating energy through biofuels. I know they talk about corn ethanol. I'm a big proponent of hemp being used again in this country to produce fuel. Is that the way out?
Well, I think that's part of the way out. I think beyond the biofuel conversation, I think we were easily misled with biofuels. We being the green movement, the people who are interested in change, the people who want to see green energy, we were easily duped. And it's a shame how easily we were duped because, you know, a few bad pieces of media spread across the world and said these fuels kill kids. That's a very broad statement. You know, taking fuel from corn is one thing. You know, and remember, 90-something percent of the corn, 95% of the corn in the U.S. is inedible. It's fed to animals. So there's so many layers to that conversation that were glossed over. So that for a simple argument, like, let's kill this before it gets too hot, before people really get interested, and they see they can make fuel from hemp. We can make fuel from algae, and that stuff's powerful. Because when you can make fuel from hemp and algae, you don't need an oil company. And when you don't need an oil company, you're a threat to what sustains the United States economy. And that's what the film really goes into. It's not about biofuels. It's about a massive green revolution that starts this year with the new administration, with everybody holding them to account, with nobody letting them get away with anything, and with every single town pushing with all of its might to turn the ship back around. Because right now we have a government, in the words of Barbara Boxer in the movie, we have a government run for and by oil companies.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that we could do here, you know, symbolic gestures, sometimes people, you know, decry them as being empty or meaningless or whatever, but to me, one of the big symbolic gestures, and I remember this clearly, going back to 1980, I'm about 12 years old, I'm just getting into politics and understanding what's going on with it, and Jimmy Carter was president. I remember that he put the solar panels up on the White House and how cool that was. Even as a kid, I remember thinking how cool that was. I remember growing up with the Native American crying over all the garbage. You remember that commercial? And so
one will forget that, right?
Yeah. And so as soon as Reagan came in, he went and took down those solar panels. I think a big symbolic gesture that would be very, very useful would be day one, Barack Obama, get into the White House, put those solar panels back up. What do you think about that?
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, we actually showed the solar panels in the movie. We worked closely with the Carter office to get the footage of him. He's there in the film. He inaugurates the solar panels. It's very emotional, very powerful moment when you see, God, this is what a president should be like.
Yeah.
They should be putting solar panels on every building, you know, and they should start with the White House and then move across the country. And that's the Green Revolution that Fuel, you know, the second half of the movie deals with. How are we going to do this revolution? What's it going to look like? Who's going to be involved? How powerful can we be? And the amazing thing about the second half of the movie, I mean, we're in Portland, the Portland Mercury News here called you know, they specifically cited the second half of the film, and they said it's astounding. Because when you get how deep the corruption is and you get how far in the wrong direction we've gone, then you can really start to get, wow, we have so much power to turn this thing around. And like you said, biofuels, just a piece of it. Plug-in hybrids, underwater turbines, wind turbines, solar glass panes, every building that has a window, those windows can actually be generating electricity. Every rooftop can have a garden on it. So there's a radical transformation that we can do with our infrastructure now that doesn't require, you know, we don't have to bail anybody out to do this one. You know, this one's going to make money. This one's going to create jobs. And that's the power that the Fuel film really gives folks. And people come on the website, thefuelfilm.com, and they get excited and they begin to argue and they begin to talk and they begin the conversation.
Well, I think it's a very important. I'm sorry, Josh. I was going to say, I think it's a very important movie. People need to see it. Check out the website at fuelfilm.com. The movie premieres here in Portland, Oregon at the Fox Tower Theaters Friday through Sunday, continuing through Sunday night. And next it's off to Seattle and Austin and a bunch of other places. Check out the website. They'll have more information on that. And Josh, thanks so much for joining us. Like I say, it's one of the most important issues we've got to address in this country. And I think your film is going to give a lot of people some hope.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thanks to your listeners in Portland and everywhere else.
All right, thank you. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. When we come back, your phone calls at 888-7-RADICAL and our free-for-all segment, as well as your emails. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Join the radical revolution on the inner tubes. Log on to RadicalRuss.com now.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Welcome back to the show. It's 50 after the hour. And yeah, poor Senator Ted Stevens, the longest serving Republican, 84-year-old, 7-time convicted felon, Ted Stevens, unfortunately has fallen behind. Well, unfortunately for him, has fallen behind in the election. Yes, we're still getting election returns coming in, and he's now a couple thousand votes behind Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich in that election. So, hey, congratulations, Dems. We might get up to 58 in the Senate. The race between Al Franken and Norm Coleman in Minnesota is going to come down to a recount. And the race between Saxby Chambliss and Jim Martin down in Georgia is going to go to a runoff. So there still is the potential for 60 Democratic votes in the United States Senate. I was going to get to that, too, and have a big, long discussion about Joe Lieberman and his chairmanship. And I got so wrapped up in Prop 8, I didn't get to it. Like I say, 5 hours worth of show and only 2 hours worth of time. But hey, let's go to your calls and get some of your opinions here. We've got Dave in Chicago hanging on the line at 888-7-RADICAL. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Russ, how's it going, buddy? Yeah, you're all over Prop 8, but it's really worth it. It's something that's really important. You got all kinds of people out there like Dave from Michigan. Arguing with righties like that is my specialty, although I'm not up on Prop 8, and what you did to that guy is beautiful. It's something
I
like to call political karate. Kick his ass with names, dates, places, facts, and figures.
Yeah, names, dates, facts, figures, he there's one thing he didn't understand.
You have offended my family, and you have offended a Shaolin temple.
Yes, he offended me and my family. My family of gay and lesbian friends, neighbors, and even family members who are gay, and yeah, that definitely offended me. Thank you, Dave, for the compliment. Totally appreciate it. Let's go down to Hinesville, Georgia. We've got Jeanette on the line. Jeanette, welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ, I'm a Christian. I believe in God and I pray every day, and I was horrified at what happened in California. I got into a heated discussion with my son's youth pastor about gay marriage and about abortion. And, you know, the thing is that Christians on a whole have no idea about the Constitution. And what's funny about that is that the Bible says that you should follow the laws of your land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a servant of Jesus, you submit to the laws of your land. So it would behoove Christians to get to know the Constitution because, you know, there's equal protection. I mean, you get rid of the, you know, gay and lesbian rights to marriage, then, you know, we really can go back to slavery. And,
yeah.
and that's just not right. Women shouldn't have the right to vote. You know, black people should be enslaved.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just crazy. And
well, you know, Jeanette, I thank you for calling me and telling me something like that. I have a lot of Christian listeners, friends and family who agree with you that way, too. And I guess even as a bigger issue than, you know, whether Christians are supposed to follow law and all that, I guess one of the things that's always confused me is I can understand why you're concerned about going to hell. Why are you so concerned about whether I go to hell?
Well,
isn't that my right?
Well, it is. And part of it is this, and this is what I got into the discussion with my pastor about, was our job as Christians, God calls us to share the good news, right? To
mm-hmm.
share about Jesus and give people an opportunity to hear his message and choose it or not. But it's not our job to make people choose it. We're just supposed to share it.
I agree with you.
And that's what I was telling my pastor. I'm like, we can't, you know, Jesus has given us free will. We can't make people do anything.
I think that's a great point, Jeanette. Unfortunately, I'm up against the clock. I got to get some more calls in.
Yeah, I know you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. I appreciate the point very much. Let's go to Damien now in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Damien, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ. Just wanted to, you know, tell everybody, you know, we just had our Prop 8 rally here.
Excellent.
And it was a lot of fun, a little rainy, but, you know, it's all about, you know, it's all about just being out there and telling everybody just how important this really is.
Where was the rally, Damien?
The rally was in front of the Capitol Reflecting Pool, all the way down the National Mall, around the National Monument, up 17th Street, and in Lafayette Park at the White House.
Okay. Now, as far as this rally went, you know, I saw some clips from some of the ones in California where, understandably, gay and lesbians were very upset. I heard some hurtful things, you know, against black people and hurtful things against Mormons. Was there any of that going on, or what was the atmosphere?
Absolutely not. This was extremely peaceful. I know that doesn't seem, you know, strange thing to say extremely and peaceful at the same time, but it was very, very peaceful. No one, there was plenty of black people, plenty of white people, Asian, every skin color of the rainbow that was out there, and everyone's peaceful to each other. There were no animosity towards anyone.
That's excellent. Thank you, Damien, for your call and the report from Washington, D.C. I want to let everyone know, by the way, check out my website, radicalrust.com. I've just posted that four-paragraph letter that went out from the Mormon churches, and I want your opinions out on the website if you didn't get a chance to call in. Is this the church violating their tax-exempt status, or is it just individuals exercising their First Amendment rights? Check out the letter itself, what was read in every Mormon church, and you can make the decision. You can sign up for an account at RadicalRust.com and get your opinions out there. Also at RadicalRust.com, we're proud to announce we've got the podcast working. The podcasts of our shows are online at RadicalRust.com not a half hour after we get off the air. So if you missed the first part of the show and are wondering what we're talking about when we mention Dave from Michigan, you can go back and listen to the podcast in about a half an hour. It'll be online. You can listen to it absolutely free at RadicalRust.com. While you're out there, remember that we are putting that out absolutely free. So if you feel like helping to support the show, we've got a little donate button on the left side of the website. You can donate through PayPal or your credit card and help us to continue keeping the stuff coming to you. Stevie and I are completely independent. We are not owned by a network, a radio station, a corporation, or anything. It's just me and Stevie here pumping out the truth, facts, and logic as best we can every weekend. Now, before we close up the shop, I do have one last thing we've got to get to that we do on the last segment of our show every week here at the Russ Belville Show.
I don't like spam.
I love it.
That's right. It's like catnip for British people, Monty Python clips. Yes, it's our listener email segment. You can send me emails at radicalruss@gmail.com. And really quickly, I've just got one here from Will in Kelso, Washington. Hey, did you hear what codename the Secret Service gave Obama? Renegade. Is this some kind of a joke? A guy who has been rumored to pal around with Muslims and terrorists is given the codename Renegade? The Webster's Dictionary defines renegade as one who denies his religion, or a person who abandons his party, a traitor, or someone who is like a renegade, traitorous. So it must be really comforting for Obama to be given this name by the people whose job it is to keep him from getting killed. They gave W the nickname of Tumblr. I assume that's because he gets drunk frequently and falls off bicycles. But I fail to find any humor in giving Obama the codename Renegade. I think it's effed up. What do you think? You know, I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of Renegade being the synonym for traitor, but now that you mention it, Will, I think you're right. I think that's a bad codename. Secret Service, come up with something new. Oh, everybody, thanks for joining us here for the Russ Belville Show. We've got to go. We'll be back next weekend at the same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, be silly child.